Now, these great fairs were very, very important centers for the growth of trade, for the promotion of trade, until gradually, by the end of the 13th, the beginning of the 14th century, trade began actually to move from the Mediterranean world to northern Europe, and also in the opposite direction by ship. All right? But earlier, trade tended to move over land and or, and by preference, when possible, on rivers. Always much easier to float your stuff down a river than to drag it down a road. It was only with the advent of the railroad in the 19th century that trade, overland trade, again, became very, very common in much of Western Europe. But through the period that we're concerned with here today, trade is still generally, at least in Northern Europe, overland, and it concentrates in important fairs. Now, there were also places in the south of England, for example, in the Baltic Sea Basin, for example, where various cities leagued together to protect their commercial interests, to avoid unwanted and unwarranted competition, for instance. Now, it's interesting that the increasing growth of trade began to lead to, for instance, more sophisticated contracts, more sophisticated commercial contracts. It began to lead to partnerships and then eventually to corporations. That is to say, quite simply, the idea that a large number of people could get together, pool their wealth, and be vastly stronger than any one of them by himself. Moreover, you can also distribute risk that way. If I buy a share in a ship and the ship sinks, I've lost something. If I own the ship and the ship sinks, I may have lost everything. You see? Now, of course, because there can be mishaps, insurance began to be sold. So a whole series of subsidiary industries, if you like, subsidiary businesses, subsidiary economic practices that were, in their way, productively parasitical on commerce began to grow and spread and develop in high medieval Europe. Entrepreneurship was very much in evidence. Several vast commercial networks emerged. We can watch some very large-scale commercial networks begin to grow. For example, there was one that connected the North and the Baltic Seas, really the whole Northern Seas, the Northern Atlantic, the North Sea, and the Baltic, which linked together the British Isles, what we would think of as the Low Countries, as well as Northern Germany and Southern Scandinavia. There were important commercial networks that went up and down the Rhine and back and forth on the Danube and up and down the Rhone, the great river of southern France, southeastern France. So the great river networks were always very, very important. Italian cities, but particularly Venice, though there were others, Bari and so forth, Genoa, had very important commercial networks in the Mediterranean. Venice, in particular, had a far-flung and very sophisticated commercial network in the eastern Mediterranean. Now, the eastern Mediterranean world was linked by land routes that went right through Central Asia to China, the Silk Road, for example, and other famous passageways like that, but then also a vast set of seaborne trade routes in the Persian Gulf and in the Indian Ocean. So whether goods came by caravan or by ship from the Persian Gulf region and from the Indian Ocean region, thus linking together actually South Asia as well as the eastern coast of Africa with eventually the eastern Mediterranean, and then through, for example, Italian merchants, the products of that part of the world were brought back to Western Europe, and then because of these riverine or overland trade routes in Western Europe, then those products moved even to places like France and England and so on. We notice also in this time that there were greater efficiencies in surface mining. Now, in the Middle Ages, deep mining was impossible because you couldn't get the water out of the shafts. You simply couldn't get the water out of the shafts or out of the mine galleries. So most mining tended to be surface mining. And most mining in the Middle Ages was not for metal, but for stone. It was what we would call quarrying, really. Now, if one looks at take out an encyclopedia, think up some famous churches, for instance, that you're aware of, whose names you know. Look when they were built. There's a very good chance they were built in the 12th or 13th century, and they're built of stone. These vast stone buildings had to be built with the products of ever more efficient mining. And then, of course, you may want to build a building in a place where there isn't particular stone, or not the stone you want, so Now we're right back to our transport. So you see, we have to move this stone. We have to move stone perhaps over fairly long distances.